Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast. Facilities Committee Meeting. Complete recording. August 4, 2015.
Let's start with roll call, please.
Marcus Delgado.
Brian Boyd.
Dave Racka.
Julie Hayward.
Stephanie Gray.
Bill Anglin.
Napoleon.
Mary Russell.
And can we have approval of the minutes?
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Wincott Elementary. Dr. Bundy.
Yes, Wincott Elementary. Instruction of Bible. Since the last June, it was the last report that actually I did was in June, a lot happened. We're all towards the end now. Just go over this picture, for example. The entire 100% of the roof completed. They started doing the punch list on the roof system. All the coping columns are done. The concrete is done. And landscaping is 90% completed now. And they're going to finish it by tomorrow. Everything is getting done, pretty much getting closed with mulching and curbing and everything else. The asphalt work, we have 2 more days of the asphalt. In some areas, we put in 12 inches of the asphalt. So it's a lot different than, we have 6 inches, 4 inches, and 2 inches. So that's going to be done the next 2 days, and that will be 100% completed. And also, the striping are going to happen on Friday, and on Friday we call on that our township to give us for CO. We're going to put temporary CO on the that's pretty much on the schedule. Playground is 100%. We have 3 playgrounds, and all 3 of them are done. And the rubber material is completed, the panels are ready to be used. Classrooms, this is the second floor. It's 100% completed. The furniture is all in, 100%. 100% of all the boxes that we're supposed to move from modular building to this building is all completed. All done. And the cleaning, we're doing the final touch up. The power guys starting cleaning, getting the final touch up for our future stuff. This is a picture of the hallway. This is all of them pretty much the same concept. This is all done, and the only thing that's left is the final sealing the traffic floor. That's pretty much everything that is done. And we're going to do that at the end of next week because still we have somebody to walk in town and do all that. So,
that's it?
You haven't seen the spire.
This is the first floor. This is again, it's all the classroom the same. Just everything is done. And the furniture is on. Gymnasium, this is that we bring all the boxes to gym and then we take it on different areas. This was actually a picture maybe a couple of days ago. A lot of those boxes are gone, but we're still doing some of them.
It's an obstacle course. Any student still dumb? We're recruiting.
This picture is also showing all the safety valves. Everything is all done. The entire gymnasium, from flooring, painting, lighting, is 100% completed. This picture of the cafeteria was not a very good picture, but all the furniture and all the cafeteria stuff is all in. And we are ready to open the door. We just have to wait until the last part in the next 2 or 3 days to pass by. Next week we're going to start getting set up everything in the cafeteria and gym so we all come. And we can invite people to come. Kitchen, 100% complete. We have our inspection coming from the Department of Health tomorrow. And that will be a final inspection. We passed that. Fire marshal inspect, we passed this state inspect, we passed the ADA, all these requirements all completed. We have another one site going to be on Friday. We're going to do an elevator with the state design. We're going to do a lot of inspection now. I think it's about 15 inspections. monitors is all 100% completed. The final is the cleaning, the floor, the walls, and all that is pretty much all done. Again, this was a great project. We're still working on it. And next month, I probably will bring all the financial part of it, you know, how we made it in the whole project. But right as of today, we're still under budget. And I'm on time to open the store for everybody. Part of that ribbon cutting is on Thursday. So everything, next week, we're probably going to send a letter out to everybody that we all come to complete our work. It's probably was a very successful and it was a great project.
Board questions?
So when do we think we'll start to, you said let everybody in the next couple of weeks, and the teachers also?
Well, again, we are in August 4th. We usually, our teachers come back in the 20th, so we still got plenty of time. But I would, after Friday, I would know more, because the inspectors are coming. Now, right now, I think we're going to pass, because they give me a list of the stuff that we need to do, so we can jump in ahead and keep getting the stuff done for them. That by Monday and Tuesday next week, I will notify the principal that we could bring people in. They're not coming back. We still got to do the cleaning. You know, we have to do the hallways, but they're going to be in our way. We're trying to get it done so we can come in and see it versus being in my way. It's a lot of cleaning going on.
Another question is, can we assume, having seen the property, it doesn't look like there's been any significant rest of the major trees on the property, but
no damage. All the trees that we said we're going to save, we saved. And some of the trees had to be removed, and everything is based on the drawing that we presented, the zoning and everybody else. We didn't want all the trees in the front, they're all staying. We had one complaint from one resident, and then that. For 16 months of construction, I think it would be great. With all the activities that happen in there, such as nothing.
First thing, Mr. Bruckow?
Yeah, I just want to comment. I'm around the township and I've seen all the schools very recently. And one thing I've noticed, and I'm happy to see with that it looks like Winco's going to follow suit, that the landscaping that was done just by Chatham Elementary and that stuff is really, your settings are just really pretty, and the buildings are great. I mean, we have real compliment to everybody who had a hand in designing them and adjusting from all the community and school efforts and comments and you know, things that people wanted. The result, I mean, we have really beautiful buildings. Very, very proud.
Thank you. Ms. Hendrick.
Related question in terms of the shrubbery, just a question was brought up by one of my neighbors. There are some shrubs that have died since you put them in the next, you know, it's been 100 or a couple of days, not uncommon. But do we have...
It's been a little warm recently.
Do we have any ability to actually, from the nursery where we get the shrubs from, the replacement value?
All the shrubbery and the saw and all that work is under kind of the warranty is under the contractor for one full year, and they come back and replace them. So for example, in the Cheltenham Elementary, we had the same problem. We lost about 27 trees. They came back and they replaced them all.
At no cost to us.
No, there is no cost. That's part of the work. I said, he's the same subcontractor that did the Cheltenham. He's doing this one too. So if the saw is, you know, and they didn't come back, yeah, I'm going to replace them.
I just want to second what Mr. Rackow said about the buildings. How great they look. We walked by Chapman Elementary the other day, and the landscape, you know, everything looks picture perfect.
We build it good. We also have a good people to take care of it, too. So that we have the people there, and they take it to the heart and work very, very hard to do that day in, day out.
It shows. Thank you.
I had just one question. You said that the pavement is being put in depending upon the use of the asphalt between 2 inches and 12 inches. How long How long does the 12-inch last? I assume that's where the bus is.
It's not 200, it's 6 inches and 12 inches probably, and 12 inches is the areas of the buses that are going
to the water buses.
And the rest of it would be about 6 inches, 4 inch base and 2 inch top.
Okay, I assume 12 inches is probably like 50 years.
Yeah, it lasts, but it lasts a long
time. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd be able to answer this question, but how did the brick paver selling go? Did we sell a whole bunch of bricks? People got their names added up.
I think she said about over 50 or 60.
Oh, cool. And where are they going to go?
They are going to go right in the front of the building.
Cool.
And right there is a paver area. So we fix all of the paver that we had extra. We send it to you guys. They're going to do their work and send it back to me. And all of that is going to take them and put it in.
Cool. Great. It's
going to be right in the front.
Thank you.
And black is off to there.
Black's up there.
It's all made there.
Is it too late to buy a brick?
You haven't decided, we're still thinking.
Okay. He's already decided. Hope it's not too late.
Make sure you buy one and
shuffle. Oh, okay.
They come in packs of 20.
My daughter's up in front of Myers. I'm sorry. Any other board questions? Any questions from the community? Yes.
Lorna Rosenberg, the Environmental Advisory Council from Cheltenham Township. What's the status of the signage, the lead signage in the building?
Inside and out. All the students, the one you're talking about, the student designer, they're all in. I was going to take a picture of the next meeting.
Oh, okay.
The student design, all that. It came beautiful.
Why don't you tell everybody about that again?
Well, we have somebody had this idea. And then we went to our student, actually the principal and our student, and all the kids got together and designed a lot of different signs, and we put them in nice framing and all that, and they're all in different hallways.
Signs for what, directional signs?
No, the greenness of the building.
Saving energy from all kind of the lead design. And that was, thank you very much.
That was the architectural team and the school.
Somebody raised the flag.
But I want to say that, when I walked with Ms. Clark around the building, those signs popped because they caught my attention. And they're in this plexiglass frame that sit at the corner of some of the hallways. And I asked her, I said, what is that? It was part of our really green sustainability efforts. And we wanted to get a representation of what our students felt, what that would look like in terms of conservation and things like that. And I love them. I thought they were absolutely spectacular. So,
that was the good work of the students, the teachers, and the architects.
Yeah. Yes.
Good. And Laura.
I just made the phone calls. That was the easy part. Sort of.
All right. No further questions?
Next is Cedar Brook's middle school construction project. This is actually to hire the commissioning. The purpose is to hire the commissioning agent for Cedar Brook middle school construction project. The scope of work of the commissioning agent is that they usually work on all the HVAC equipment, the commissioning, plumbing, control system, electrical, lighting system, air quality management, and fire safety. We received a bid from the different players on Aramark, the lowest one is Department of Energy at $69,700. Actually, these are the ones doing the work right now for us. The recommendation would be, summit would be the administration recommend the lowest responsible bidder, Department of Energy, to perform commissioning service for Cedar Brook Middle School construction project. This is again, those are the RFP that I came out and we're sending out. We're getting a very good numbers from it because we created a very competitive RFP and we're getting
any more questions?
Mr. Yeah, I just have a question. This is my first time from the beginning of the process when I was part of the board, Winkle was already going through the process. Just to brief refresh my memory if it was said it was done already, but the architect was hired and approved to complete that with Gilbert Perez.
We send the RFP out and we hire an architect.
Right, and then the next step would be this commission.
No, the next step, we did the construction manager,
right.
Then we did geotechnical,
right.
Which is a geothermal conductivity. We did asbestos,
right.
And an oil tank, and this is commissioning. We still have to do the third-party inspector.
Okay.
This is because our township don't inspect, so we hire the third-party inspector. We put the spec out, and then we hire.
So I guess my question is, how many more of these do we have
two
to
more.
Go through?
Okay.
Two more?
Two more.
And then we can start work?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just well, curious, because I'm looking at the whole summer and saying, darn, the summer's gone and that building still looks safe. So if we're sticking to this two-year, I know, but if we're going to stick to this kind of two-year construction,
right.
You know, rebuild, which we're calling a rebuild project, how much more time has to go by?
We hire some of these people, maybe don't have a whole lot to do. Like say, third party inspector, there's nothing to inspect, but we hire them, that's why we have them in last. But the architect, they're doing the work, they're doing designing, construction manager, they're doing their work, they're doing estimating and working on the design. And a lot happened, a lot of other trade, like a conductivity test, they're
sure.
Giving the information to architect to, can we do a geothermal, we can do a geothermal.
Right.
Because all that is all part of this work.
Right.
You want to know about
demolition? I'm more curious about, like I said, this is my first time. Like,
when will a shovel hit the ground?
There are
two demolition. Project. One is asbestos, which is about to remove all the windows.
Right.
And
we already approved that.
We already approved the consultant. Now we have to bid the job, so contract to get the job to do the actual work.
Okay. So yeah,
these are two more of these.
Two
more of the professional.
Yeah, two more of these.
And then we go.
And then we can be. When do you think we will start the work on C4?
On asbestos, which is, has to go first. And asbestos would be. I'm working with them now. Their spec is almost done. Probably in the next 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to bid the job.
Right.
And then we have to advertise it for 3 weeks. Then we'll have to bring it to the board. So that will be about 2.5 months to 3 months.
November, December.
They will
first start seeing some progress.
They're going to see it starting trucks there and
okay.
Start digging. And
so.
Going back
to when we first anticipated, when we first started talking about it, are we still on track for a two-year project to get our kids in that building?
So right now, we're on the schedule.
Thank you.
We'll wait to see what the next presentation is.
Yeah, that's up to me.
Thank you. And there was a timeline that articulated that the next 2 years.
Of what the project is
yes.
Going to look like?
Like each phase of the project over a 2 year period.
We got that.
We probably did.
I can't go back there.
No, I'm just saying. Okay. I thought that would usually.
We were on the schedule.
Okay.
But the original plan was, I remember because I remarked about it, the demolition begins in February.
The actual demolition of the building that the prime contractor, not the hazmat contractors, they're going to, we hope them to get a start. If everything goes, if the bids go back ahead, no problem.
Thank you for refreshing my memory on the tentative start date of demolition.
Mrs. Russell.
Yes, so the commissioning agent, just to refresh our recollections, is what that does. We have hired those in the last number of projects, and that has saved us a lot of money in the long run, because my recollection is there wasn't one for Myers. Is that right?
No, we did have
one.
We've been hiring the commission, and they are a very, very important part of this project.
Okay.
To make sure
everything gets done.
Right,
right.
It's
okay.
So that was my question. What exactly do they do?
What exactly they do, say, for example, if they go check the motors. Say that the motors is a design for so much RPM, and make sure you might have a motor in your house, it is working and it's running, and maybe it's not running correctly. They have devices, they go check that to make sure that motor is right. They check all the electrical panels, they check all the control system on HVAC to make sure everything is done
based on design, based on the specification, based on manufacturing specs, that all of our equipment, the end of the construction, is all working properly. And we get a binder of the report from each area, and hundreds and hundreds of the inspection sheets that just come to my office on each, every single equipment that we have, which could be 1,000 equipment out there, that this is this team to do.
Thank you. Mrs. Higman.
And just, you know, I know this has come up a couple of times, but as we continue the process and continue having RFPs being submitted and solicited, that we remain, you know, clear about our request and requirement, not requirements, but our request to have bids by minority and women-owned businesses, Cheltenham-owned businesses, so that the policy that we put in place 2 years ago is something that we can continue
to follow. That. And after we talked, it was in June, I think, we would contact our district attorney. They cleared the form for us. All our RFP now have attached, I think, 3 pages of the form that it goes with the RFP, and we're going to start seeing the minority, which you know, from the minority, which contracted, and then we get build a good library of it that we can send the specs to them. But right now, we don't know.
Okay, and so we expect for the next RFP that goes out, we'll have that in place to be able to shoot those RFPs out.
All of them.
Okay, thank you.
That's great.
Yeah, in that conversation, we didn't include anything about Cheltenham on businesses. We did minority and women, but not anything about Cheltenham.
They did.
No.
I don't recall that. Nothing about locally owned?
No. I don't recall that. I guess we can go back to
look at all the surprise. Yeah, I think it was.
Any other board questions? Any community questions?
Oh, there's nothing that precludes a Cheltenham company from business on.
Right.
I can go, but they're aware of it, so they
can. We advertise all of them. It's on the website. We have 2 different papers. We send our fee out to people that we know. And with this additional work now, we could start seeing a minority and they get it. That was a step that we weren't doing.
Any questions from the community?
The next Cedarburg Middle School Rebuild Project. I have a guild architect team here, and they're going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Dr. Bobby.
I saw it as good as no slides on here, so I thought it was going to be a short note.
They're not.
Okay.
They had that in his hat.
Under budget and on time.
Apparently not.
You say that and you can have early night. On target and under budget. Motion.
Hi everybody, my name is Danielle Hopper with Philadelphia Pets, Dr. Mesley. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
I'm here tonight to give you an update on the design development. The last time we met was in June, about a couple of months of vigorous work that we've been doing. We wanted to get you up to speed with, so everybody's on the same page. And hopefully we can answer some questions that are all being asked. Okay. So meetings to date in June and July, we've had multiple meetings with the educators, including the administration and the faculty. We have got 3 meetings in with the faculty prior to them dismissing for summer break. We've had, I think, about 6 meetings between the community and a stakeholders group that was put together that included professionals, parents, and students. We've had 3 times with Cheltenham Township staff. The first meeting was with the township engineer, police chief, fire marshal, public works, and zoning officer to give them a general overview of the project. And then the last 2 meetings have been more detailed discussions about our land development process. So they can talk a little bit about that, but things that we need to be aware of and tricky points and some zoning issues. So we wanted to get that all out on the table to see how we can address it moving forward. As far as the design team, we've been meeting with our consulting engineers throughout the process. Remember back in June, you hired the construction manager, so we've been getting him up to speed this last couple of months to get him understanding the project and putting together the process. If you also remember in June, you approved the submission of PlanCom A and B, and we made that submission prior to June 30th, and we actually had a review with the Department of Education on July 16th. So. Meeting still pending. We're going to continue to be with the educators. We need to bring Dr. Marseille up to speed with the project. This is the first introduction that we've made a presentation to him, so he's got a long ways to go to get up to speed.
Some ideas.
Just hold on to those ideas.
I see.
More on what we get, we like it. And continue to meet with the administration. We are planning to do our preliminary land development submission in mid-August based on the information we've gotten from the staff. They are also putting us on the agenda for the Shade Tree Commission in August. The building commissioner that Ray just talked about for approval in August for the board to hire is the last member of our design team. And our entire team put together. We need to get him up to speed because he's got a lot of catching up to do, reviewing the plans and understanding the project. Obviously, we'll continue to meet with the consulting engineers and the construction manager. Data collection. There's a lot of information we're still waiting for. You think we'd have it by now, we're still waiting for a lot of stuff. The boundary and topographic survey. The topographic survey we just got 2 weeks ago, July 22nd. That's critical information that Glenn needs to make his land development submissions. He needs it for grading, he needs it for stormwater management and ADA accessibility around the site. The boundary survey, we're still waiting for that. We're anticipating to get that at the end of this week. That's critical information that we need to record on the plans before we submit it for land development. The traffic study report, I know there's been a lot of interest about the traffic study. We still don't have it. It's still in process. So I can't report anything yet because I still haven't gotten it. But we're anticipating completion this week. Geotechnical. Remember Ray put out a preliminary geotechnical RFP. We got that report. And we need some additional borings, test borings done around the site based on our current plan. The proposal for the main test boring site, I think he's asking for approval of that in August as well, right?
No, I think we've done that.
Okay. So that's in process. Geothermal conductivity test for a geothermal system. We've been at the site recently. The rigs are out there right now doing that test boring. So that process is in, that work is in process right now. We do not have the report. So again, we still need that information in order to control. Still in process. Ray was talking about the asbestos environmental survey. That is complete. Good news. One of the things that we're concerned about is that vermiculite wall insulation in the exterior wall, we were concerned that that might be asbestos, and we're testing the back negative, so that does not contain asbestos.
That's good.
Yeah, growing good news. The oil tank is being completed.
It's going to be gone.
The oil tank is reported as being submitted to the DEP for permitting and removal. The environmental consultant is completing the writing of the specifications at the end of this week. That's the information needed to bid the project so that the contractors can come in and do the abatement of the building on site. Architectural engineering, we're in the process of doing the life cycle cost analysis. For those who don't know what that is an analysis of the different types of mechanical systems. Both looking at short and long-term first costs and long-term costs associated with the various types of mechanical systems to determine which is the best solution for the building. That's going to be pending the results of the conductivity test to see how much, if the subsoil is conducive for geothermal. And if it is, great. If it's not, it might require some additional work, it would cost more money, and that would have an impact on the life cycle cost analysis. So, again, it's still in process. We will be updating the LEED checklist once we get a lot of this information plugged in. We did a structural steel investigation over the summer. That's been completed. What that was is that we did a small localized coring of the exterior wall to get to the structural steel column in the wall to see whether or not any water that may have penetrated that wall over the years has caused any structural damage to the columns. And we did do that in, I think, like four different locations around the perimeter of the building and found that there is no concerns about the structural integrity of the steel columns based on that analysis. Better to try to find that out now as best we can in order to plan for the building. And we've done the building survey and completed that over the summer. Now, a building survey includes three different things. It includes analysis of the program, meeting with your staff. It includes the data collection on the infrastructure of the building and looking at the physical plant. And it also looks at the code analysis of the building. What's interesting when we start meeting with your staff and meeting with the principals is that we learn a lot more about how the building actually operates on a day-to-day basis. And we can't really understand that until we meet with people that live it every day. So, and it's kind of conducive of a building that's not been renovated since it was constructed. And programs keep getting added into the building. Special ed, specialists, a lot of things to support the educational program. And when you don't have, you're not adding additional room to the building, those programs got to go in whatever space is available in the building. For instance, gifted program. You know, they carved out a couple of small classrooms for gifted. You know, really not conducive for the program to allow students to come in and meet privately with a counselor or group. Counselors, for instance, if they had a, here's a guidance counselor's office, really small. Bring people into the building, into the room, whether it's meeting with individual students, meeting with their parents. Trying to find spaces that are adequately sized is another big part about how we're looking at the building. We've talked about the gymnasium and the locker rooms on the lower level, not really being conducive to managing the students during the day. We've talked about the auditorium being small, only accommodating over 500 seats in the auditorium. The stage is really not conducive for performances. The library is internal to the building. But other things that we talked about with the faculty, you notice the science labs, for instance, all located in the same general vicinity. That's really representative of a science department. One of the things that came out at the first meeting that we had with the faculty is that we're based on a team structure. A team is made of math, English, social studies, and science. Why can't our building operate the way we operate and design the building, design the classrooms with a team structure versus a department? So that was a great bit of intel that we took back to the drawing boards.
I'm sorry, and that team structure was just for the science labs?
No, there's six teams at Cedar Brook Middle School. Mm-hmm. So, you know, right now the teams are kind of, the English, math, and social studies are mixed together with the science. They have to go remotely from their team to get to the science labs. Okay, so those are some of the programmatic issues that we looked at. Also, the STEM program in the former industrial arts, never been renovated. So looking at those types of programs and how we can design the facilities to meet those programs. Some of the things that we also looked at as far as code-related issues, the door entrances, for instance, right here, the entrances coming in the door need to have the proper clearances so that a wheelchair can come up to the door and open it properly. You'll see it at any of the new elementary schools as far as having clearances. So that's an issue. The stair lifts, this section of the building is a three-story section of the building. There's a stairwell on each end of the building. The stair width, the stair height, the stair depth does not meet code. So we need to replace those stairwells in its entirety. One of the things that came up in discussions with the faculty is that there's one set of group toilet rooms in the building for the students. There's another little small toilet room over here, so these students have to walk all the way down here to get to the toilet rooms. So that was, again, an operational concern that they had. Part of the physical plan thing, we talked about mechanical, we talked about a lot of those things, but we're noticing evidence of some cracking in the forest lab, there's some structural glazed tile, and block in the quarters that shows some evidence of cracking. So those are the kinds of things that we take back in structural engineering. Okay, so this is our proposed plan. This is based on all the information that we've collected from all the different meetings that we've had. Just an overall concept looking at the plan. looking at doing the athletic complex, consolidating all the athletic programs in one area, an academic core to the building, and the performing arts area of the building. Based on that first comment from the faculty meeting, creating a team structure, located two science labs in the same general vicinity that we are now, and then three classrooms flanked on either side. So here's a team, here's a team, and the same thing's repeated upstairs. So that's four of the 16. The other two teams are located. Here's three classrooms, science lab, two classrooms, science lab. This is actually displacing the library that was internal to the building. Recapturing the library in that courtyard area by putting a roof and a floor slab in it. Actually, I think we will achieve a couple of classrooms as well as the construction areas as well there. Art, in the same general location, we slid the STEM classroom, STEM program down a little bit, sized it appropriately to accommodate that program. We've also added another bank of group toilet rooms in this corner of the building, group toilet rooms for this corner of the building, blowing this up, getting in a little bit closer so you can see some of the programming areas. You notice the areas in green. Those are the special ed and support spaces associated with the building. Remember those two gifted classrooms that we showed you before? Now we're sizing them adequately. They're actually minimum size of a full-size classroom. Emotional support, life skills, having the facilities available and the room for life skills. The media center is also flanked by two small group instruction areas and an exploratory campus. This area is really meant as a student-based learning center. It's an area for team collaboration. This space can be divided into two spaces for two large group instructions. It can be opened into one large group space. Staff development can happen. There's a variety of flexible uses for that space. The current administration area is, if you're familiar with that, it's just a bunch of little rooms. And in all those little rooms, they have the administration, the guidance, and the nurse, all inadequately sized. One of the things that's come out of in our discussions is that really guidance wants to be throughout the building, not in self-contained in the administration of the principal's office. Let the students feel like they have comfort level going to the guidance council and talking to issues. So that we have them dispersed around the building now. And this is just limited to that secured entrance vestibule coming to the administration before they get led into the rest of the building. And it's for the principal, conference room, and boardroom. And then providing adequate space there for the nurses' room. The nurses' suite is also adjacent to the athletic complex as well as currently adjacent to the administration and the main entrance to the building. And then we have guidance and assistance principals located around the building, again, closer to the academic or the classrooms of the building.
When you separated the APs or not, the administrative team is not in one suite?
No.
Okay.
No, just the principal is in the administrative suite, and then the guidance and assistant principals are throughout the building.
Can you tell me what the acronym ISS?
Principal suspension.
Are you saying they've got a problem with their discipline? Okay.
All right, let's do a blow-up of the athletic complex. As we proposed before, we were removing the existing gym and lower-level locker rooms and creating a new gym that has seating for spectators, boys and girls locker room on the same floor level as the gym. Direct access to the exterior to the athletic fields. The staff has requested four team rooms and the health classroom in the same general facility as the rest of the athletic complex, as well as an auxiliary gym that would accommodate either wrestling if it was for going down on the lower level, the whole performing arts area is also a combination of not only the auditorium, but all those other academic spaces that support the auditorium. We located the choral band and orchestra on the same floor level. A lot of great conversations have come out of this, the meetings that we've had with them. We actually captured the space underneath the lobby area for because it's basically just putting foundation down. For practice rooms, you would kind of deaden sound on that exterior into the wall. For the room facilities, we have some utilitarian areas. We captured the space underneath that stadium seating that's happening in the auditorium for costume storage and prop storage, additional storage. But the music lab down to this level, again, another music department. It's not on an exterior wall. It doesn't need to have exterior windows. It's an ideal location for it. We provided dressing rooms, boys and girls. I don't know. I'm not sure which are boys and girls. I think that was girls. With toilet rooms. With toilet rooms, they didn't want them directly adjacent to the dressing room, but provided from the exterior or from the corridor so that they have access to other people that need it. So yeah, there's a lot of great conversations associated with that to meet the educational program. This is the upper level of that three-story section of the building. And this section here is a repeat of what's happening down on the main floor level. We stacked the science room, we stacked the forest room. Here's another team, here's another team. Classrooms on the other side of the hallway are going to be assigned to world language and other support classrooms such as that. Again, here we have another guidance counselor upstairs and an assistant principal with the conference room. We also have a special ed office upstairs. And for toilet facility. I wanted to kind of show you again the lower level of that three-story section. Actually, the boiler room remained in its current locations. We call them mechanical rooms if we don't know the main boilers at this point. The receiving area will be in the same general location, but you see that there's a corridor going to the kitchen and a corridor going to the corridor. Faculty dining is really small, inadequate space for the cafeteria to serve the population. The serving lines is a typical serving line. It's really difficult to move the students through on a timely basis. The kitchen is vintage 1970s, as well as standard rooms for science. A lot of storage rooms. There was unidentified classrooms without windows on the back part of the lower level. So what we're proposing is maintaining again that mechanical room. Receiving kind of open that up so we have direct access to the kitchen, direct access to the corridor. Here's that music room I talked about earlier. You see how much space is being now utilized for the kitchen to properly serve the population. Instead of doing serving lines, we're looking at doing a food court and to move students through the lines to facilitate that, which is quicker. Expanding the, without expanding the square footage of the building, we've expanded the seating capacity of the dining commons by just coming into the inside of the building. Reconfiguring the spaces. Reconfiguring the family consumer science, again, having a food lab as well as a science lab. And then faculty dining comes over here. It does have some exterior windows, which means that there's an additional space for faculty dining. Interior lighting.
I know most of you here. For any of you that don't know me, I'm Glenn Harris from the New Design Group, and our firm is the Civil Engineering Landscape Architecture Consultants that supports Guild Architects in the site aspect of the project. So what I wanted to start with this evening was existing site conditions. Just as a point of reference, Route 309 is kind of down here along the track at Bogox Avenue. The site, Longfellow Road, is illustrated here by the tennis courts, and Rock Creek is in Rock Creek Road is indicated up high on the sheet. The way the circulation works on the site currently is that vehicles can enter either street, but vehicles can only leave the site by way of Rock Creek. And the existing building is shown in this vicinity here, where there are two loops. There are 18 full-size buses and 6 smaller size buses that serve this building. So what happens when everybody arrives for arrival and dismissal time is that the buses take precedent in the loop areas, and parents try to get access to the site and deliver their students to the school, but the traffic is coming in from two directions. There's no real turnaround. The loops are filled with buses, and you have, as a result, a real log jam of traffic on the site. That's the way it has operated for some time. There are 92 parking spaces over in this vicinity in the athletic fields, kind of along this portion of the site. Students, as they, I started stating to go, as they get out of their cars, then they also have to get into the building by way of, you can see a set of stairs here, so they get into the building by way of the main entrance by getting from wherever they're dropped off and sometimes passing through buses, going up the stairs, getting into that access location. So it's not ideal for students entering and exiting the bus park. As I say, it's very congested. This is a view of the proposed site plan that has kind of evolved over a period of time as we worked through a number of issues. The proposal here is the lighter purple indicates where the existing building that would remain is situated. And then you'll see in the darker sort of purplish colors there the areas of the building that are being added on to it. An oval area to the front of the building that serves the main entrance area that has parking for about 49 vehicles in it, and a larger parking area off to the side here. All of the athletic facilities are still located in the same locations that they are currently, just some minor upgrades to some things like the orientation of baseball infield and things like that. So make modifications at the outfield area. The way that the traffic is designed on the site with this site plan to alleviate the congestion that I spoke about a minute ago is that, let's start with buses. Let's just describe to you how the buses would arrive and offload students at this facility and leave the site. And then I'll add to that how the parents come. And what we've tried to do is really separate the bus circulation and car circulation, so there's not that co-mingling and colliding of activity and students crossing between and such. If a bus comes in from Longfellow, and some of them do, not all of them, but some of them come in from Longfellow, they would get in essentially what we have is a middle lane of a three-lane entrance drive. The right-hand lane is reserved for emergency vehicles. We've heard that there's been times where it's quite congested and emergency vehicles couldn't get there because of the congestion. Kind of reserving that right shoulder for emergency vehicles to access the site. But that middle lane would be for buses. When they get to the stop sign here, they would make a right turn, they would revolve here, and they would actually go back around when we have this loop so that they can stage in this vicinity with the passenger side door of the buses offloading directly onto the sidewalk. We've talked to the transportation director of the school district and the transportation services director, as well as Chief Norris, the police chief. We've met with folks on the circulation patterns and discussed it with the traffic engineer, so they'll be incorporating this thought into the traffic study as well. But as the buses offload their students on this sidewalk here, then when they leave the site, what they would do is they would exit around this loop. They would not go this way. They would go back the way that they had come, and they would go behind the building, make a right turn, and exit out Rock Creek, because that's the only way you can exit from the site. If a bus is coming from Rock Creek to arrive, what they would do is they would enter Rock Creek and make a left turn into this area, revolve back around, and simply stage already facing the right direction to offload their students. And when they leave, they would depart in the same manner that the other buses would leave. So all the bus activity essentially is kept to a loading activity on this side, and discharge activity out Rock Creek from behind the building. Parents, when they arrive with their students, also could arrive from either direction. They could arrive from Longfellow or Rock Creek. Let me take the Rock Creek direction first. If they come from this direction, we have some signage that directs them, and the traffic flow that we're setting up is so that they can run in this direction around this driveway that we've created in this parking lot. That driveway does not currently exist. It's something new. They would come around that parking lot, they would make a left turn here and be in the left lane. They would make another left turn, and where you see kind of a shaded brown area is a defined pull-off zone that we would have for parent drop-off. in this driveway, and then they would exit back out Brockton Green. If they were arriving from Longfellow, they would simply get in the left lane, do the same thing, drop their speed off here, and leave by way of Brockton Green. And what you can see from that is that the car circulation flow through the site from either direction is not commingling with where the buses are trying to offload students. So we have a safe passageway for students getting off buses into the building and getting off cars into the building. The parking area is located in the same vicinity that is located now. As I indicated, athletic facilities are all located here, grouped in the same locations that they are. We'll be adding stormwater management features, which I've kind of highlighted some areas in sort of a blue dashed line under the parking, not parking, paved play area that would be towards the rear of the building. There would be some underground stormwater feature. Some underground stormwater feature, possibly in this region of the parking lot. Something like a rain garden near this front area. And there's a deep existing ravine on the site now. We're going to be retrofitting that to flatten out some of the bottom of it and use a jumbo block type system that creates a little terracing effect to be able to flatten out the bottom of that and use that for stormwater facility as well. The stormwater that's on the site today is not managed at all. Runs off the site, and that's kind of been in the historic case on your schools because they were all built, you know, pre-stormwater management, but that's a huge issue today. The greenish area around the perimeter of the site is heavily wooded areas that would remain. There are some tree removals that are proposed in and around the vicinity of where the parking lot is located here, as well as in the front areas of the building where there are some clusters of groves and trees. But we are preserving the bands of heavily wooded area, of course, on steep slopes that are to the side of the site where Rock Creek flows, and there is a row of fairly mature silver linden trees along Ogunks Avenue that would remain. Bring those up and try to make a nice view of the site with those.
Okay, so in August, again, we'll be reviewing the project with the superintendent of the administration. We'll continue to review the cost estimates, the administration and design teams. We'll begin the plan development submission process. I think there's still the conversations that we had with the zoning officer that they need to make some zoning determinations for us and we can make that part of our submission process. Turner Construction will be preparing a preliminary cost and construction schedule. We originally had 18 months or something like that, and the original, he's going to break it down into phases to determine actually what our duration time is. We need to build that into the schedule. Again, so this is all, you know, we're still continuing to develop the project. In September, we're going to come back to the school board and give you an update and prepare for the next step for the ConCon project. So, any decisions tonight? Just to give you information.
That's it. Thank you. Okay, we'll go around and start with Marion. We're going to take it this way. Mrs. Russell.
Does this, the new land development plan mean there's no more underpass?
There's no more underpass.
Thank you.
No,
we heard
everybody. What is the square footage that covers the site? So I remember talking about this just really adding, let's say, 10 or 20,000 square feet.
20,000.
I assume we've added significant. And then more theater and
I think the thing is now it's about 75,000.
You've added 75?
I think so.
So what's the total square footage? So we added 75 on top of?
No, 20,000 and plus 55.
Oh, 20 plus, okay.
I don't have the exact number.
It's 55. It's about the existing building, about 55, 50.
Close to 58.
Okay, the total square footage existing is 156,000?
156, and you're adding 20,000?
Was the 156 with the gym? Was the 156 with the gym?
With the existing gym that got involved.
Yeah, so
we're launching it. It's 158,527.
With the gym,
with everything existing.
Okay. And then you're adding how much?
I think they can answer that better.
And I don't have the numbers with me.
The theater, I mean, it's all the buildings. So
I know the gym, I know the new gym addition is about 19,000
square feet. So, that's a lot. I think we're adding a lot.
And so a lot of things that we presented tonight really was just based around all the information we got from your program, the plant, and COVID issues. So now we've got to regroup and get the construction manager on board and really try to drill down on the project and see where we are.
What was the concept of that in the theater that does the most of that, in that whole theater thing?
Well, one of the things that was requested is looking at doing a theater that can accommodate the entire student body.
Sure.
And so the entire student body with administration is about 1,500 seats that have what it's going to be designed for.
So it's a theater for COVID.
It's a theater for COVID. It's for the arts. It's currently a band, choral, and orchestra, and music lab in your building. We brought those down as part of that performing arts complex. It's right size the rooms to accommodate the amount of occupants and people that actually take those programs. It's really driven around the equation.
Okay. And one of the other things, and it's not necessarily for this, I love the idea of spreading out the guidance counselors. I think I do, but the assistant principals, I know at the high school.
That's different than when I went to school.
That's a good point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it's great.
Thank you.
Mr. Gray?
Question. Can you just line up again, highlight how the buses leave from around the back of the building?
That's the rack out.
In relation to that Tate play.
Like 3 months ago, the Dave rack out bus.
Yeah, right. Memorial Loop.
Memorial Loop. You got to die there in the next couple of years.
Go to school this trouble.
This is essentially the paved This whole zone of paving is the paved play area where whatever game that's essentially be off to the side. There is a driveway system that would pass through it. And you could also use that, by the way, for parking, for events and such, where you could use that driveway, open that up to be able parking. But for buses to leave the site, it would be a condition where the playground would not be in use. And the buses that are staged here would revolve around the site in this direction and meet the site through parking.
Can you show like the length of buses that it takes, all 18 buses and 6 vans come into that loop?
Yeah, it does. To stage all 18 buses and 6 smaller buses. Smaller buses are staged kind of in here. We have an area of buses here that sometimes arrive late that wouldn't go through the loop at the back. They will simply pull in and wind here to the front. But the whole staging process begins here and follows all the way around us, all the way back to the back.
Yeah, my concern was more the fact that buses are leaving the site are going to be going through that play area. Which, I mean, granted, I'm assuming that obviously, the morning and the dismissal time, there aren't going to be kids out there playing, hopefully. But I'm concerned that the play area where buses will drive through that.
It's a consideration we'll try to learn more about. My thought was that the students wouldn't be out there during that time.
I think what Ms. Parker was talking about is we need a place to have a hard service play area that after that period at lunchtime. So that's what you do with kind of designating the hard service play area. Midday. The buses are midday. And if any buses or something that are coming to the site throughout the day, they would simply come up in here, right?
Yes.
So this is just the patterns.
And in the morning, buses don't all arrive at once. It's more sporadic.
Yeah.
So they would simply pull through the front oval. What I described to you is more of the mass condition at the end of the day where the buses all arrive awake for students. Morning, they would simply pull through the oval and discharge and then continue on their way back. But they would still follow the same pattern.
And where's the emergency lane?
Gray-shaded area right there. Mm-hmm. There's actually three lanes. There's two white and one gray. The gray is emergency.
And, but where does it, how does it get around to the, does it all, can it all look completely around the building and then they just use the same?
It just gets you to the stop sign intersection there, and then at that point it's really just a wide driveway for buses, and the staff reviewed it, the fire marshal reviewed it, and the fire chief reviewed it and felt that they had adequate movement to be able to.
So in the mornings, if the buses are staged there, heaven forbid there's an emergency and they need to get on the back side.
Yeah, they can do it because of the driveway where the buses are staged is actually a nice wide driveway, 30 feet wide, so we have the ability to buses.
And they can pass here too, you know, like in Stack Bay, and another car can pass there?
Correct. It's a 30 feet wide driveway in the aisles of the parking lot in the front as well as all along the side.
I have a couple of questions. So I know we talked about the buses and we talked about the parent drop-off, and we had talked about the walkers. So is there a dedicated sidewalk on Longfellow and on the other cross street? Because I didn't see it.
Yes. There is a sidewalk that comes in off of Longfellow now that runs down this side. What we're thinking of is we would use the crosswalk system that's going to be here and get the students into the crosswalks that are here, and there's a handicap accessible and crosswalk condition on this side of the intersection here. So we use that as a walking path with crosswalks to get them to the building where they can go in either direction. And coming from Rock Creek, there's a sidewalk on this side of Rock Creek that they can do the same thing, crosswalk at this point here, getting the sidewalk system.
And then with the 900 student or 900 seat theater, what's the, I know it looks like it's increased, but beyond the 92 spaces, but if you have a performance and you're really expecting 900 people to come, do we have parking accommodations for 900? Or even close to that?
The zoning ordinance applies a parking regulation school based upon either an elementary school or a high school. It's what we need. And so we've been talking with the township zoning staff about how to interpret that. I don't know that they're going to give us an interpretation until we submit the plans, but what we're going off of is the required amount of parking. It seems like it fits more the elementary category because we don't have student drivers in middle school. And I would think that that's why the ratio is higher for a high school. I don't know that, but guess that. So the required amount of parking to support the project is actually only about 86 spaces or 92 spaces on the site now. But from what we're told, that's not really enough at all for frequency of events and such. So we are providing a large additional area that's still kind of under review as we develop the plan and improve the surface ratios and the zoning criteria to submit it, but probably it's going to be in the range of 180 parking spaces that we propose somewhere around here. So it's a significant increase of what you have now, and it actually exceeds the zoning requirement from what my perspective is, but the zoning officer will have to concur as to what he feels the real zoning criteria of parking. I've asked them a number of times, but I think it's still under review.
And again, not that 900 people would drive into the site, but I think we need to think about if we have a 900-seat theater, that we need to have parking that can accommodate significantly more than 100 of some parking spaces, potentially.
Okay, well, by statute.
Yeah.
How many cars can you get in around the bus?
Right. For an event, you can use the outer edge of this as a parking, a parallel parking edge as well. And like I said, you can use this for a little bit of parking.
maybe you could transport them.
We have them party the mall and
transport
the mall.
And my last question is related to the AP suite. I mean, I know that this was kind of a novel idea to sprinkle the guidance counselors throughout the building, the assistant principals throughout the building. I guess this is a question in terms of safety and security. If you don't have all the assistant principals in a suite, dedicated suite, if there were any emergency in the building, how are they talking to each other if they're in totally different parts of the building? I'm thinking about worst case scenario if you had something like a lockdown. Is it preferable that they're sprinkled throughout the building or in one concerted space for safety and security to deploy something like a lockdown?
Walkie-talkie.
I'm just asking.
I think that actually like the idea of spreading out the APs initially. I've seen that, the first time I've seen that. And I think with coordinated communication and walkie-talkies, that will be facilitated in the event of that. Because then you have individuals who have their own sort of zones, so to speak, that have that responsibility.
You would be kind of staged in different parts of the building as opposed to trying to all get from one
spot.
Emergency in that one section, you already got somebody right there.
It also said that, as a former assistant principal, building principal, thinking about where I was housed in relationship to when something did occur. And though in my heyday, I used to be fast. Old age has caught up to me. I couldn't get to the side of the building as quickly as I normally would if I was a little younger. So it is advantageous in many respects that you have different administrators really stationed at different parts of the building. I think the response time shortens tremendously in terms of who can respond to, lack of a better term, the C-wing. Unfortunately, if we're all housed in the main entrance of the office, to get an administrator to the C-wing in a very large building, that takes away seconds, which could impact your ability to respond to a situation.
I think another advantage just to build on what you said is that your administrators are already, they're pre-deployed. So you have also eyes in different parts of a very large building so that it's not only a matter of sending people out to meet a problem. You've already got people there who could probably see the problem before. It's like instead of having cameras on all the walls, you've got real people there. So I think that's a real advantage. I like that. And just talking about the parking, one thing that will happen, and I predict no matter how many spaces you put in there, if you have a packed house of 900 seats, we just don't have the space to build a parking lot. They'll do exactly what they've been doing since Cedar Brook put up. They park all the way down the roads to your house. No, they just park right down the two roads that lead up to the school, and they did walk over. I have a question. Where the buses go on the side there, where you're picking up students and dropping them off, and they use that side entrance there. Am I right? That's the side of the where the gymnasium is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there'll be entrances. There's entrances here. There's entrances here.
Okay. Could you go back to the slide that shows the interior layout of the building?
I'm telling you, I was just there.
I know.
I was trying to answer your question, and then
So the
buses are lining along here, right along here.
That's the main entrance.
The main entrance. You have the gym entrance here. You know, I don't know if she stages people. I think they go right to their rooms. I don't think they stage like the elementary school. They stage up to the gym. I think she said that they're going right to their rooms. But there's a hallway access here. Hallway access here. They also come along to this side. Hallway access there. So it gives them multiple locations to access the building.
The reason I'm asking you about that, Ms. Hopper, is that one of the things that we're doing in all the buildings is trying to create as much as possible, it's pretty tough in an open public school system, some security. And instead of having one or two main entrances where everybody's going in and out, we're not creating half a dozen.
Yeah. You always have to have exits.
Well, exits are one way out. They can be locked that way.
We can open those doors for when the students arrive. But the minute they arrive, they all get locked down. And everybody has to access the building through one location, and that's the main entrance. That's typical in all of your buildings.
Okay, so we would have to be somebody, you know, at those entrances in the morning or afternoon, whenever the buses were going to be monitoring.
You're still going to have monitors out there watching the buses.
The other thing is, with the way the theater is constructed now, I really like that as far as location, because if there are performances, like in the evening, or if we decide going forward, we would run it, we want the community organizations to rent out the theater and happen. That could be, we could be able to lock down the rest of the building and isolate that area.
Right. We have the elevator and the toilet rooms located here. You can lock down the rest of the building and then they just have access to that.
I think that's great. The other thing is, when the, if you go back to the, is it a big problem to go back to the overall?
No, not for you. What do you want me to do?
The overall.
Site plan?
The last plan, yeah.
Sure.
Okay. That whole Owens Avenue side of the building, which is like the bottom of that picture, that's really where 7,000 people an hour during rush hour see the school. Right now, there is as ugly a fence as you could possibly imagine.
Really?
The property. You should be
housing. Tom says, "How ugly is it?" I said, "It's really ugly."
Looks like we're housing World War II prisoners of war in there.
There's no hole in the fence.
Huh?
Not yet. There's no hole in the fence.
But there's no hole in the fence.
There's no hole.
I know it's probably pretty early in the design stage, but I'm hoping that we can do something. That's what everybody's going to see.
What we've been talking about is doing an ornamental fence, taking the chain link fence down. It's a 12-foot high fence.
Yeah.
And we've actually talked to zoning about this and talked to the township about that, which is favorite replacement. And then putting an ornamental fence, if you're familiar with Cheltenham, around the kindergarten play area. It's kind of like you hear.
Is that like what's putting up a wind code now?
Yes.
Similar.
Ten feet high.
But that would be great, yeah.
You're exactly right. I mean, that is the first thing that you see off 309. So.
Well, it's what, unless you're going to the school, it's the only thing the public sees because it's in a...
You know that big abandoned building right down the street here? Linwood? We're going to take that fence.
You better sand it, paint it first. We'll have you on the rust.
Mr. Malloy.
I guess my only question is, in the morning, like, the two main entrances would be where the buses drop the kids off, and then the other kids come in by the auditorium, then you just go right up the corridor and then go to their classroom. Is that how it works?
Yes,
sort of main door there?
I'm talking with Ms. Parker and Mr. Bender. Currently what they do is they cross the, and they actually come up
they
the
those
stairs.
Steps, I know that.
Yeah.
And she said that that's probably what they're going to continue to do, still access the building on the sidewalk system into the front main entrance.
Oh.
Inclement days, there's an access point right here into the corridor system on the lower level. They can come up here, go up either around the building this way up to the elevator, or on this way up to the elevator, or the stairs.
It's like set double doors or whatever there.
Yep.
But on a normal day, they'll continue to go up the steps.
That's what she said. I mean, again, that's the operational part of it, but we're giving them options of, you know, how they can access the building.
Okay.
But all visitors will have to come in.
All visitors come in that main entrance.
I just have three questions. I guess the first one is about students walking. Is there going to be a sidewalk on this side of the street, or is there not going to be a sidewalk?
So the kids, my just fear is when parents come in, them cutting this way versus coming all the way around, and you've got kids crossing the street. So if you put a sidewalk on this side, then it's a straight walk, and the kids don't have to worry about parents shooting gaps. That's just a safety issue that I thought. The other question that I have is, is there the track being redone, or is it going to stay gravel in this proposal?
It's all, you know, being discussed as far as...
It's not even gravel.
It's grass.
Actually, yeah, for
there's a lane of
the 2046 Olympics were bid in. That's how state of the art the track's going to be.
Is that part of this proposal, redoing the track? So I guess my final question, I see that in your last slide it says here that in August you're going to review cost estimates with the administration and the design team. Well, what about the board? When do we get a
September
estimate? So why later? Why wouldn't we as a board get a cost estimate before it goes to the design?
Because there's a lot of work that we need to do in terms of making sure that the cost estimate is accurate and value engineering. Looking at options in terms of alternates and those kinds of things.
So the bids that are currently going out right now by the RFPs that are going out that Dr. Bobby is putting out now, right, are based off of what number or what project scale? It has to be something, right? Because you're putting out bids and we're hiring people and saying, hey, this is the building that we want to build, correct? So they're bidding their jobs based off of this building. So my question is, what's this Cadillac school that costs?
What are they commissioning bidding this job is on the amount of the time that they have to work?
To build this building.
To build this building. Right. So I think it was 18 months for the total duration of this project. Then they have a scope of work of what they need to do.
Based on this building. Okay. How much is this building estimated to cost right now? Because they've got a number that they're giving you to bring to us, for us to hire them.
Most of the work that they're doing isn't based upon the cost of the building. It's based upon the size of the building.
Scope of work that
so the commissioning agent is looking at the number of systems, the size of the building, roughly the 170,000 square feet of space that they would be commissioning. So they know how much time that takes. So that has nothing to do with the construction cost at this point in time. So later on, after the design team works with the construction manager and puts together all the costs, make sure that everything is reconciled, then we come and present that all to you. Okay. To you before.
So my follow-up question is, we've presented this to the public. They're here now. We're dreaming. This is our dream, right?
This is what's going
on. In your professional estimate, how much are we still on par with our roughly $40 million estimate to rebuild Cedar Grove?
37 hard cost.
Excuse me?
37 hard costs.
Excuse me.
Are we
50
still...
million total is what we, the board, had been brought to the board with this document right here.
Okay. Are we still in that? Is this building still in that price range?
We're still in the process of reviewing
that. We don't have all that information yet. That's what we need to work on in August, review in September.
Okay. So I guess my recommendation to the board would be that this information be brought to us before it's brought out to these public.
Their design team is, again, all the professionals that we've hired to build this. Don't think design team
and
necessarily
the administration.
Has community and a whole bunch of other folks.
But that's who they're meeting.
No. Yes. So look at when they say design team, they're generally talking about
engineers, consultants.
All of those people who are going to help them know how much the building costs. So they're going to meet with those people and say, okay, how much do we think this is all going to cost? And they'll probably even go back and forth. And they'll come back and say $58 million. And then Dr. Bobby will say, there's no way in hell I'm going to the board with $58 million. And then they'll probably bring us back a number in September that will be in the ballpark, because otherwise it would waste a lot of time.
This is how each of the three elementary schools that were rebuilt anew were done. I wasn't even on the board. I sat in the back here and watched, but that's how these things were done.
goes out, comes back, the administration makes recommendations, the board reviews everything.
I'm just concerned that we're dreaming very, very big here. And we're getting a lot of people's hopes up really high. We've got professional paintings out in the hallway that this is what Cedar Brook's going to look like. And we're doing, this is the third time or second time we've seen this presentation. I'm just concerned that we've got another project, an EP on the way, the high school, that we still need to pay attention to. And, you know, if this is going to cost way more than what we can actually afford, we need to be aware of that.
Yep. Well, they can't just take off and build it.
I totally understand it, but we're now in August. So, you know, we keep getting the same presentations, and why are we looking at something we can't afford? My life. Wasting time. And we've got a 2-year window to build.
But this all falls out of an RFP that started the process. They came back with this design proposal.
Sure.
They spent time meeting with faculty, staff, administration, taking that input, moving things around, redesigning it. Stephanie and I meet with Dr. Bobby on a regular basis, like you do with Carol. And we get in, we get feedback from the design team through Dr. Bobby. I understand what you're saying, but it's not like, you know, this is the guide right here. This was the guide. This is what they were hired to do. And I understand what you're saying, but this is following the plan. In terms of the time, I'm nervous about the time too, but we are following the timeline that was given to us in January by Dr. Bobby.
I'm concerned about dollars.
I'm
concerned about dollars.
We all are.
That's my number one priority.
We're all concerned about that.
That's it. So I like it. I think it's beautiful. I like Cadillacs, but I know I can't afford it. So this is a Cadillac to me, and I just want to make sure that we can afford it.
And as well, we have lots of meetings to go through later this month with the administration and your new superintendent, and it's just seeing this for the first time. And yet, we need to do a little bit of backtracking just to get him up to speed, but we're not slowing down. We're going to make sure that we avoid trying to get the cost of the people.
Did you have a question?
My only, so I've been sitting here wrestling ever since I asked my question. I wasn't crazy about the underpass, but I also want to make sure that kids are safe. And so now we have a number of crossing points here for pedestrians. And so, you know, the question that Ms. Haywood asked, how are we going to make, because it looks to me that we have students crossing buses. Well, intersection with buses and cars at multiple points.
So the important part of this group is to remember is that there's a clear separation of bus and vehicle traffic.
Right. So that's huge. Right? And that's
okay. So then, as far as the parent drop off, and most of the kids coming to the site are on buses.
Not even walk.
And what I understand from Dr. Parker, there wasn't a lot of them on walk.
Remember, it's 800 kids.
There's people.
That's not it.
Yeah, parents that drop off, you're pull off into this pull off lane.
Anybody arriving by a vehicle is sort of safe. They're exiting from the right hand side of the car, and we'll have all the stuff like we do at the elementary schools. I'm okay with that. It's the walkers.
So Brad's going to be doing this with Delgado's sidewalk.
Okay.
Hey, I got a name.
It's not as nice as Mr. Rackhouse's bus.
We can't afford a value
sidewalk. Wait a minute, you got $100, we can put your paper on there.
And I appreciate also all the continued work, too, because there was a lot of opposition to the underpass, and I feel
a little bit back as far as the walkers. We'll reach out again to the staff. And
another thing is that I think we've talked in a lot of these meetings with all these schools that we need to do a better job of encouraging walking. So we want there to be more walkers in the future, not fewer walkers in the future. So all those parents who are dropping off, we want them to be not dropping off and the kid to be walking. Well, it's true. It's true, but there are quite, the Windhoek catchment area is pretty much walkable, so not all of it.
We're going to have bike racks on the sides here.
We probably should be considering our bikers.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know why they
can't do it. I think there's a lot of things you can do if you fix that 5 pointer.
There's others going to come out and do it. Yeah, but green wing.
Even on the elementary level now, they're driving.
One last one from the board, go ahead.
I've got to think, however attractive you make the entrance, parents are going to drive their kids, are going to drive their kids. I mean, it's just, we're not going to change anyone's hair. The challenge, I think, to making it any, I don't know if we're really having a problem other than an anticipated problem, because I can't remember ever a child getting hit or hurt going to go across the driveways there to get to school. But the challenge is you have two different main roads coming into the site, and you have the parking lot, all three of which are sources for children walking. And when they walk, no matter what you do, human behavior is they're going to take the shortest distance wherever they hit the property to the entrance they want to come into. So they're going to, when they come down Long Way from the Rock Creek line, they're going to just go make a straight line to the door. If they're dropped off in the parking lot, they're going to cut across the parking lot just like they do now, and make a straight line to the steps and up to the door. So again, the challenge would be you could build an overpass or underpass, whatever, but you're going to have people coming from many different directions, and that's not always going to be the way they're going to go. I don't see it as being that big a problem. I mean, they've been doing it for an awful lot of years that way.
Questions from the community? Do I have a motion to close?
You got the rule.
Identify yourself, please.
My name is Fred Melber. We are a group that's been working with the school board. I have been asking since, I'm going through my notes, since April, what the square footage of this building is. And every time I'm told, I don't know. That is incomprehensible to all of us. You have no idea what the square footage of this building is. Nobody has an idea what size the building is built in.
Well, gym's about 19,000. I remember the auditorium being about 45,000. I just don't know my
idea. Well, and the question we've raised quite a few times, the emails, is why aren't we looking at, and to raise Mr. Delgado's question, why aren't we looking at costs as we're going on so that we don't get in September, oh my God, what are we going to do? Because you are running out of time if you're trying to open up September 2017.
The answer to that question is that the construction manager was only hired in April. June. So they've just come on board. We're in the process of educating them with this project. They're looking at they're starting to look at the costs. They're getting familiar with the facility. We're discussing with them the types of systems so that they can start putting together their estimates. So they're in the process of doing that. We really don't have those hard costs until probably this coming month.
However,
so it's all in process.
However, you provided a budget that the board went moving forward with. In terms of hard costs and so on. You didn't show anything. You showed this is the same thing we've seen now for how many months? 3 months? Mm-hmm. You've made the changes on the circular thing. You haven't shown us, have you changed the exterior look? Have you changed that at all? You didn't show us the exterior.
It's basically the
same. Okay, so we had met with Dr. Bobby about 4 weeks ago, and we were told this is the meeting that we're going to be having the final numbers. Now we're moving another month. All of us are concerned, legitimately, that we don't know where these numbers are going. Are you going to build a Cadillac? How are you going to make your changes? What are you going to do when it comes September and the numbers are off the plan? What are you going to do? Because we keep delaying this thing and we're going into September. And all of us are very concerned about this. And I don't think any of us think we're getting enough. Because if you can't tell us the square footage at every single meeting, that's not a lot of confidence. It really isn't a lot of confidence.
From now on, we'll have the square footage at every meeting.
Well, just watch those one meeting.
If that's what works for you.
No, it doesn't work for me.
Well,
that's arrogant on your part, sir. That's arrogant. It was a simple question that many of us, we have architects in our group, that just wanted to know the answer. And I don't think that's really that terrible to answer that question.
Has there been a date proposed?
Identify yourself.
David Kalanopoulos Park. Has there been a timetable proposed for the Act 34 hearing?
We'll bring that to you in September when we talked about next steps for PlanCon. That's part of the discussion.
And wouldn't the Act 34 requirements in the PlanCon dictate what the overall cost can be for the building?
That's something that's presented at the hearing, yes.
Well, I don't want to be difficult, but I would think that those numbers either are worked on now or should have been worked on or worked on the draft form. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I think that there are probably some number that's known at least high level for what the limitations are, at least under the PlanCon process. And I'd like to know what that number is. And I'll just say rhetorically that I'm surprised that number is not being made available tonight. But to move on from that rhetorical statement, two other points about the parking. One I've raised numerous times before, where I'm very familiar with the township zoning code and the parking requirements, but pragmatically, if you're putting a 900-seat theater, you probably need 300 parking spaces. Despite what a board member said, there really is not a lot of nearby parking because of the site location. I have concerns that when there is an event held there, if there is a 900-seat theater, that there will not be anywhere near enough parking on the property and nearby, and or it's going to be a free-for-all based on the configuration of the driveways and circulation through the site. My last point, as I've raised this before, is that you have a vast number of parking spaces in the oval by the front door. I just hope that somebody's looking at that logistically about how that's going to be signed, managed, controlled to avoid that conflict with cars pulling up to the front door and or parking the spaces during the morning and afternoon periods when students arrive and leave the school building.
Ms. Haywood?
Just an observation. It seemed like in terms of the additional square footage, we're talking about between 44 and 46 square feet. Thousand square feet, which is significantly more than what we had been thought was going to happen. We're talking about 20,000 additional, right? And so what I'm hearing is that the gym itself is about that size. Mm-hmm. And so with the auditorium, we're looking at, I think, 44 to 46,000 additional square feet. And that does come with a cost. So we'll have to
remember
look at that when we get those
numbers. That option was developed in option one. Was, didn't have the opportunity to talk about program like we've been able to talk to the administration about program about. So that's where that 45,000 square feet is coming from. It's program good. It's program good. Major educational program for City
of North.
We'll be coming back to the board in September and talking about costs associated with that and next steps.
Norris Park, also a part of the same group, following the square footage conversation, many of the people in the profession of commercial real estate. Not commercial real estate, but all buildings are built out of materials with square footage dimensions. And when you add an additional 20-some thousand square feet to your program, add the estimate of, I think it was $300-some a square foot, that's a significant cost, I would think, that we need to consider. In my experience, program is driven by visions and hopes for Cadillacs. And so I guess I would just wonder if your team has been considering what's reasonable, and what other schools that are we might like have, and are we the people that are defining the program? Are they asking for the moon or not? So that's.
Rick Hathcart, Elkins Park. I don't really expect an answer, but I want to throw this out there. There's been this kind of. Nebulous definition of what we're going to do with the extra space that we get from covering the courtyard or converting the auditorium, and it still seems nebulous to me. I don't really understand what the program driven uses for that space, that learning commons or whatever it's called. I guess too much space is better than too little, but you know, there's a lot of space being created in this building. I just kind of wanted to know what is driving that space.
Probably not best coming from me. It's probably best coming from an educator. That's from the principal of the school. So it's something we need to get back to about.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on a comment. Having had 8 years of experience attending events at that school, I would tell you that whatever the parking is on site, there are literally a couple hundred minimally spots on the access roads to leading up to the school. I park there, I know exactly where they are. They're very long roads leading up to both sides of the school. People park there all the time. Both sides of the road are wide enough to get parked on both sides. I know people who've lived in the community never had a real problem with it, you know, other than the fact that, you know, they went out to their school, they understand that. So it would be nice if we could build enough parking spots actually at one site, but there's simply no way to do it. So I would rather, I'm not concerned that people from on it. I think the auditorium needs to be the size that it is, and I think the parking is going to be a terminal problem.
Other questions?
Someone here.
No, we're not done yet. We're done. Thank you. I was looking at you to end the presentation. Do we have any more business on our agenda? So, as one of the co-chairs of the Facilities Committee, I just want to echo what we've heard from both boards, several board members in the community. We are running out of time, again, it feels like, and we need to know what the square footage of the building is, what the cost of the building is, and what the alternative plans are if we are spending beyond our wildest imaginations here. We're landlocked on this site. We can only do so much with circulation. Parking is going to be what the township dictates to us, unless we want to go through an appeal process. But things that we can control, Dr. Bobby, I just ask you to have the design team report back to you as soon as possible to inform the administration and the board where we really stand at this point.
Thank you, Mr.
And can I have a motion? All in favor?
Thank you. This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us, and have a great day.